Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 104, The Basics of Sous Vide Cooking. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to the show today. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking. So glad you found me. If you're new, welcome. You might have found me through iTunes or your favorite Android podcaster, podcast catcher app. So however you found me, I'm so glad you're here. And today I'm excited you have some time to spend because I'm bringing you a couple of really cool people to talk about a topic I've gotten requests on for a while now, but I just really haven't found the right way to present it. But that changes today. I'm going to be talking about sous vide cooking. It's a cooking technique that's really become popular, I would say, in the last 2 or 3 years, actually, for the home cook. And in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to be talking with Jay Nutt and Jennifer McKenzie, authors of Sous Vide Basics, a new cookbook that they have just come out with this month, actually, that I had a chance to review and take a look at and speak with Jay and Jennifer about sous vide cooking. Really exciting for me because I don't know that much about it. I know what it is. I've never really done it myself. So this was a really fun opportunity for me to do a lot of learning. And I know you're going to come away with a ton of incredible information if you're even remotely interested in this interesting cooking technique. Now, before we jump right into that, I just want to say you can always send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I'm always happy to hear from you. I respond to all my emails. And of course, you can find the show over on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. And you can find me on Twitter at TKCpodcast. Feel free to reach out any of those places. Always really excited to hear from listeners. I think I will keep all this intro preamble stuff to a minimum, and we're going to jump right into this conversation with Jay Nutt and Jennifer McKenzie on the basics of sous vide cooking. Hope you enjoy it. I'm here with Jay Nutt and Jennifer McKenzie, authors of Sous Vide Basics. So Jay and Jennifer, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Well, this is exciting because a while back I have received listener requests to do an episode on sous vide cooking. The problem was I didn't really know much about it myself, so I didn't think I was the right person. I didn't have the equipment. I didn't think I was the right person to do the episode. So I'm really excited today to have connected with you because you are obviously very well acquainted with the sous vide method, just written a new book, Sous Vide Basics, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So I am excited myself, not only for the listeners that want to learn about sous vide cooking, I'm excited to learn a lot just for my own information. So for starters, maybe it would be good if you could give a little bit of background about yourselves and your relationship to food and cooking, and maybe how you came to write this particular book.
Sure, I'll jump in first. I have been involved in the restaurant business now for about 30 years. I have worked my way through from busboy to waiter to maitre d' to fry cook was my first ever job in a restaurant, expediter, sous chef, etc. Also been a restaurant owner and a business owner for a lot of years. So a lot of my background and training has come in hotels. I worked with the Fairmont organization is where I did my apprenticeship. I think even before I got into the restaurant business professionally was that I had always enjoyed cooking as a kid. I liked baking. I liked cooking on the barbecue. Cookies, sort of the usual things that kids do. And I was sort of drawn to it, and I've really been in love with the business and in love with the idea of cooking. At times over the course of my career, I've often been described as a romantic cook because I aspire to what I think things can be, as much as I acknowledge the way things really are in the kitchen. Often, this is the third book Jennifer and I have written together. And so we've had a very positive relationship with our publisher in that sort of framework. And he has often come to us with ideas about taking technology that is sort of making the transfer from either very specific industry needs or, in this case, sous vide has been around for a long time, the concept of it, but it's predominantly been associated with very upper-end restaurants, real fine dining, sort of out of the general scope of not just people who cook at home, but also sort of your run-of-the-mill mom-and-pop restaurants. So with technology changing and the sous vide process being more readily accessible all the time, the publisher felt it would be a good idea for the two of us to take on this project. And so we started at about this time last year. You know, I'd been exposed to a little bit of it through my career, but of course we took a real crash course. And our goal was to take this technology that had always been very upper-end dining or industrial in the past and make it accessible to people who cook at home. And really, that's very much where Jennifer's expertise comes in, and I'm going to turn it over to her at this point.
Thanks. Yes, I'm a professional home economist is what my fancy piece of paper says, and I have a degree in a Bachelor of Science degree in Foods and Nutrition, and I have been a food writer, recipe developer, recipe editor for 20 more than 20 years, and so my expertise is home cooking and how to write recipes so people can replicate them at home, even if they don't have a ton of cooking experience. So I actually work for publishers and check other people's recipes. I develop my own recipes. I do food writing for magazines, all kinds of websites and cookbooks and things. And so my expertise is taking the information. I research things, you know, out the wazoo, as they say, and then sort of put it into words that people at home can understand and can use. So what we really work hard on is making really useful recipes, because a lot of the sous vide techniques are for chefs, and they've been developed by chefs and they're used by chefs. And one of the things that can get quite mystifying for the home cook is, okay, but how do I do this at home? How do I do this if I've never, you know, done these kind of techniques before? And also with home equipment. So any chef might have, you know, a huge stock pot or a water bath, an ice water bath. They might have an ice machine, you know. So what the tools that they have in their restaurants is quite different sometimes than the tools at home. So my job is to make sure it's accessible for people at home to replicate, and with success.
Fantastic. And you've done a great job with this book. As you said yourself, Jay, you've come to sous vide cooking without a lot of deep experience, so you had to take a crash course in the method. And I think it really shows through in the book the way it's laid out. It really has a newcomer's eye to sous vide cooking. So myself, being not very familiar with sous vide cooking, I found it very easy to understand, very easy to follow. And I think it really did give me a good foundation on what it is that goes into the method. So let's jump in to sous vide and talk about the method itself. Now, if you're listening and you're not familiar with the term, sous vide is actually a French term, and it's spelled S-O-U-S-V-I-D-E. But can you tell me what actually is sous vide? What does it mean? And what are the basic concepts behind the technique?
Yeah, that is often question number one, so it's definitely worth explaining. Sous vide is under vacuum is the translation, so it still doesn't tell you a lot about the technique. Basically, it's kind of a low-temperature boil-in bag is how to distill it down to the very basic explanation. What you do is you put food in a bag or a vacuum seal pouch. You don't even need to use a vacuum sealer. We'll get into that later. But you put it in a bag, you expel all the air so that there's just the food and the bag, and then you put it into a vessel that is contained water. And what your sous vide appliance is, and these can range from a big, huge box that's got a built-in motor and thermometer and thermostat and everything. That's what sort of was originally these machines, big, big, massive, expensive things. But now they have ones that are called immersion circulators, and it looks just like an immersion blender or hand blender, clips onto the side of a pot or a container, and it's got basically a heat source and a little fan. And so it circulates the warm water. And the principle behind this, rather than, you know, people have obviously probably done boil and bag, you know, from a prepared product, but this goes at a much, much lower temperature. And what it is a really constant temperature. And that's where you get the advantage, is you get this really low, even constant temperature. And so it cooks food low and slow, and really evenly. So we talk about the science behind that and why it's good to do that. And so essentially you're kind of poaching your food in their own natural juices. So imagine poaching a piece of salmon or a piece of chicken in a water, you know, a seasoned water. Well, this takes away the seasoned water, uses the low and slow temperature, and cooks the food right in its own juices.
Okay, so if I were to use a real-world example, and help me out if I get this wrong, but if I, let's say I want to cook a steak, and I want it medium rare. So for me, I'm going to shoot for 130, 135 Fahrenheit. That's a good medium rare range. So ordinarily, what I probably do is take the steak, walk out to a grill, which is probably screaming hot, you know, right around 450, 500 degrees, and I would put the steak on there, and I'd have to keep an eye on it and monitor it, just so I can get the internal temperature right up to that 130, 135, and then pull it off. And it's tricky because a lot of times I'm going to cook the outside more and the inside less, you know, over that really high direct heat. But what you're saying, if I'm hearing you right, is that with sous vide cooking, I could put the steak in and cook it at 135 degrees, and it theoretically wouldn't overcook because the cooking temperature never gets above 135 degrees. So it's not going to go above that medium rare temp. Did that make sense?
That's exactly the goal we're going for. And the steak is a great example that, you know, people would often ask, you know, how do you cook steaks perfectly? And my example would be, you know, your favorite steakhouse downtown where everybody goes for special events. They cook 400 steaks a night for, you know, 350 nights a year. And you on your barbecue in your backyard maybe cook those really nice steaks four times a year for four people. And so repetition builds skill, and skill builds delivery. And you're exactly right about by cooking it sous vide style, is that nice slow process is what you end up with, is a steak that is cooked entirely all the way through at 135 degrees, complete and total consistency all the way through. Cooking steaks on a grill, you often end up with burnt outside and very raw inside, you know, for people beginning. And the sous vide technique allows you to have that perfect doneness all the way through. And then you can finish it in a hot pan, a cast iron pan, or on the barbecue, and just sort of give it that finishing grilling, the marks, that nice little bit of char on the outside, and you know exactly how it's cooked through. I think one of the big advantages for home cooks is with sous vide cooking is it gives you a larger window of opportunity to cook your food. When you're a professional cook and you're cooking, that's all you do. The order comes in and you put the food on the grill or in the oven or in the pan, and that's all you're doing through the course of it. When you're cooking at home, you may have children, you may have spouses or dogs or pets, the phone rings, you know, there's a million different distractions. And so if you've got that steak that takes 3.5 minutes under perfect temperature conditions, and you're distracted even for 30 seconds, 1 minute, 3 minutes, you end up losing track of it, and it doesn't come out nearly the result that you're looking for. So that was one of the things that appealed to us about sous vide cooking and trying to get that message across, is that because if you hold it too long in a sous vide bath, it will change the texture enough, but we're talking like 30 minutes to an hour too long, it will start to change the texture of the meat. With some of the cuts, some of the tougher cuts, you know, we've listed, I think there's a brisket in our book that's a 36-hour brisket, And, you know, so that gives you a really big window to sort of, you know, allow you to do some of the other things. Maybe it's just setting the table, tossing the salad, you know, things like that. So there's a lot of advantages to it, and it really is, you know, despite its long-term use as a upper-end sort of chef tool for making each dish perfect, it really is friendly for the home cook.
Oh, okay, so that's very interesting because I was kind of under the impression that I would be using sous vide cooking to cook tender cuts like fillets or strip steaks, but I'm hearing you say I could even use it to cook proteins that generally take a long time to cook, that you might braise for several hours before it gets tender. But you can do those in a sous vide just as well?
Absolutely. And again, one of the things we noticed, we did a couple of stews, we did some braising with osso buco and some lamb shanks and things like that. One of the really nice things we noticed was that you can do some of these things in a crock pot, you know, and they take 12 hours, 24 hours sort of thing. But what we noticed with the sous vide cooking on the handful of things that we did that were overnight is that when you wake up in the morning, because the package is self-contained, was that all the odors and the aromas were contained within the package. So there was no evaporation. So you get up in the morning and you know, our house didn't smell like beef with beer and onions at 7 a.m. when you're first thing up out of bed. We had a great deal of success cooking a handful of things that were 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours. And I think one of my favorites was we took an eye of round, cooked it sous vide, and we kept it at that 135, 130 area, sort of medium rare-ish, and took it out of the cooking and chilled it, and then we shaved it and used it for a roast beef sandwich. And it was so tender, and it was perfectly rare all the way through, and we were thrilled with it. And eye of round is not a notoriously tender cut. We also had some real success. I did smoked turkey legs, which are generally long and slow process. I cooked them sous vide with a little bit of liquid smoke in and some marinades and spices, and they were an extended sous vide process. But they came out, and what is really rare in my experience with poultry especially is that it was fall off the bone tender. So when they were finished sous vide cooking, we took them out of the bag and we literally just put them on the barbecue for about 3-4 minutes on each side and really thought they were fabulous.
So is there anything you can't cook or shouldn't do sous vide style?
Some things don't really have an advantage. We did lots of vegetables, so the vegetables are kind of cool. The nice advantage of those is you can kind of set it and forget it. So you're not worried about, you know, overcooking your vegetables. But tender things like broccoli, it doesn't really do any favors to it. We had, you know, we did some cauliflower. It's better for harder vegetables, but sort of tender, you know, something spinach, for example, there'd be no point, and there really isn't a huge advantage to it. So things that generally, meats, all the meats, fish were awesome. But yeah, tender vegetables, I would say you wouldn't bother. You could, but I don't see, but we even did grains, like rice and, you know, there was a couple of things that we found, you know, didn't have a huge advantage to them, like risotto. I tried and it just wasn't very good. It didn't cook very evenly, but just plain rice was quite cool.
Interesting. So how do you actually do rice? Because rice requires a liquid to cook. So do you put liquid into the vacuum bag or the plastic bag?
Yeah, so you put the liquid in the bag, and one of the differences between the vacuum bag, so if you have a vacuum sealer, that's great for drier meats and drier vegetables, but anything you're adding liquid, you just want to use a heavy-duty freezer bag. So because a vacuum sealer will try and suck out all the liquid, and you can gum up your vacuum sealer. But what we just used was heavy-duty freezer bags, and you just press out the air. We've given a couple of techniques. There's a water displacement technique, or you can, you know, if it's vegetables or grains or something, you can use a straw and suck out the water. Just press out the water, and so you actually use less water. And for the rice and quinoa and things, we actually did it in a canning jar. So you just put the canning jar and the water, obviously less water than you would use if you're doing it on a pot, and put the two-piece lid and put it in your sous vide bath, and it was really neat. You get really nice, tender, fluffy grains.
Well, one of the things I'd love to jump in, and I'm going to break ranks with all the other chefs who wear white coats and tall white hats. One of the really sexy things about restaurant sous vide cooking in recent years has been the idea of the 63-degree poached egg. I didn't like it at all. I would rather give it an opportunity. And we do have a recipe in our book for poached eggs, and it works quite well. But from a chef's perspective, or even a home cook's perspective, to be fair, I would probably poach the egg in a pot of water in 6 minutes rather than 45.
Yeah, and I have a feeling there are several people listening that are going to be like, "Eh, no, I'm just going to grill my steaks." And yeah, I totally get that.
And again, if you're comfortable with it and you're good at it, continue to do it.
And I suppose part of it's the ritual aspect of cooking, right? You know, maybe you're getting together and drinking some beer with some buddies, and that's how you want to do it. And I get that. You know, more power to you.
Yeah, and I think this would be more along the line, you know, what for somebody like my, you know, with different generations now, but my mother, who moved out of the home when she got married and had really no cooking background, she ruined steaks for 40 years. And so it would be for somebody like her who doesn't have the confidence or the knowledge.
Well, where I see this as a huge benefit personally would be for cooking fish. And I know that probably goes for a lot of people because fish is usually the most unforgiving protein for a home cook to pull off and to cook just right.
Yeah. And you know what? And one of the biggest complaints about people, because we teach a lot of cooking classes, and people would always say, "Oh, I don't like to cook fish at home because then it smells for 3 days in the house." And with sous vide, it doesn't smell at all. So anybody that's hesitant to cook fish in their house, or they have a small apartment, and you know the smell of fish 3 days later, it's like, you know, relative thing for the holidays. You want to get rid of that smell. And with sous vide cooking, you don't have that smell at all. It's very good for that. It stays moist and tender, and definitely, and it's quick. So it's not like it takes 3 hours or anything. You can still put a meal on the table, you know, in a relatively short time. And things like shrimp, it was amazing for shrimp. So if you're doing a cocktail party and you want to do a whole whack of shrimp, it is so easy, and they come out plump and juicy. So things like that, very, very forgiving, especially when fish and seafood is quite expensive, and even the expensive cuts of meat. It's much more reliable and forgiving, so you're not going to be capable of ruining that $60 of sea bass you bought, or halibut, or something that you're going to be crying over later. And it really is helpful for that. And one of the other advantages for steaks, as we keep talking about steaks, and doing a dinner party, you know, the person that comes over and wants theirs medium well, whereas I want mine rare. And if you're stressed out, you're at the grill, you're trying to, is this one done? Is this one ready? And then the rare one's done, you know, 15 minutes before the guy that wants his well done. When you're doing sous vide, you can cook them way in advance, all at the different temperatures. So you set your sous vide at the temperature you want for well done. You cook those ones, and then you cool down the water bath. You set the ones for rare. You cook those to a different temperature. Just label the bags, and then when you go to heat them up to finish them on the grill, everybody's steaks are perfectly done. Very cool for entertaining. You take the guesswork out. You can do it ahead, so you're not standing over the grill while your, you know, appetizers are in the oven and you burn those, and you're trying to boil your green beans on the stove and things like that. So it for entertaining, it really, really does help too.
Okay, so you've just about convinced me I need to give this a shot. But I think the next logical question for us is to talk about equipment, and what equipment do you need? Jay, as you mentioned, this has typically been out of reach of home cooks, right? Because it's been the domain of higher end restaurants. the technique's been out of reach, and certainly the equipment has been out of reach for the typical home cook. And I know things have changed now, so help me understand how I would get started. If I just had a typical family of four and I wanted to get started in sous vide, what kind of equipment do I need, and what kind of an investment am I looking at?
Sort of to just get it started off, you would have to begin with to make sure that you had a pot, probably a stock pot size, probably 4 to 6 quarts, maybe a couple gallons, because you need it deep enough to be able to, the food and the packaging has to be submerged in the water. You need a decent pair of tongs for reaching in and out, pulling food out of the water. Some of the water is 140 degrees is generally hotter than what comes out of your tap, so you'll need tongs to remove. The equipment itself nowadays, probably the first time I came across it several years ago, the piece of machinery that we had in the restaurant where I was working was about $2,800. And we're probably at the point now where some of the devices that are being modified for home use and now marketed actively, you can get them through Amazon.com or probably most of the mail order suppliers like that. Anova is a really good one. That's the one that we use for our testing. And it's sort of the size and shape, if you can imagine, a curling iron.
Bigger than a curling iron.
It's about the same length as a curling iron, but about four times as
thick.
In my mind, being a geek, it looks a little bit like an unlit Star Wars lightsaber. That clamps onto the side of a pot. It's got, as Jen mentioned earlier, it's got a small impeller or propeller attached to the bottom that helps circulate the water. And it's got a heating element that is actually immersed in the water as well. So the goal is these ones now can keep the temperature of your water usually within one-tenth of a degree of control. So you're cooking very precisely. And the water keeps circulating so that all the water surrounding your sous vide packaging is the exact same temperature. And these are now running, I want to say they're about a...
They're under 200. They're under 200. They're all under 200. There's even some under $100. Dollars. So, and it doesn't matter what size, because you just use a bigger container or a smaller container. So some of them are a little more powerful, but we really didn't find that you need anything more powerful unless you're doing, if you wanted to do a huge vat of, 20 steaks or 50 steaks or something, you might want a more powerful one, just to make sure it's keeping the water at the right temperature. But, they're 900 watts, 1100 watts. And yeah, they're all under $200 now. And, you can even get some under 100. So it's very accessible.
And one of the neat things, as cooking starts moving towards younger generations, rediscovering it, or people entering it for the first time, is that some of these devices have begun to help their programming match up with your smartphones so that you can actually do programming of the thermometer and the temperature setting and stuff from your phone. They're Wi-Fi and Bluetooth compatible. So I didn't bother reading up on that. That's a little bit beyond... where I'm willing to play yet, but they are going all the time. And I think it's like what we've seen generally, as I date myself here in age, that when VHS recorders first came available, they were very expensive. And when DVD players first came available, they were very expensive. And laptops first came available and smartphones. But as the technology improves and the ability to mass produce it, the price continues to come down.
Well, I was going to ask why you think that sous vide has become more popular in recent years, but I think we've already answered that, right? You've already talked to that, to your point about the affordability of the equipment.
Yeah, I think the price point is accessible, but also I think that I would say generally throughout North America, like I said, I think as people rediscover the thrill of cooking, they want to be able to replicate not just what their mother or their grandmother did, but they want to be able to replicate the sea bass or the trout or the tenderloin or the lamb chops that they had at their favorite restaurant.
Yeah, or that they see it on the cooking shows. I have a real love-hate relationship with the Food Network and those sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah,
or YouTube, or, yeah, exactly.
And I think at least a little bit is just the complete and total infatuation with gadgetry. You know, that not just sous vide appliances, but home use ice cream makers and mixers and immersion blenders, and you know, everything for home is getting home use appliance stuff now is generally far ahead of what restaurant stuff was, even as little as 5 or 6 or 7 years ago.
Agreed. Okay. So let's talk a little more specifically about your great book here, Sous Vide Basics. Now, full disclosure, I haven't read a lot of other sous vide books, so I don't really have a wide basis of comparison. But I think if you're listening and you're looking for one book to get started with, this would certainly be a good one, because it really does cover the fundamentals, everything we've talked about today. Plus, Jay, Jennifer, you've put something like 200 pages or so of recipes in here. So it's not just about sous vide and the technique, but it's really a full-on cookbook. I'm looking at it here now, and I mean, you've got everything from breakfast and appetizers to all the proteins and fish included, sauces, vegetarian dishes, desserts. I mean, it's really amazing what you've put together here. So kudos on the breadth that you've achieved with this book. So rather than just picking out a couple of recipes to talk about, I'm going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to ask, were there recipes that you were surprised about, or what were the recipes that you were most surprised about when you put this book together?
Yeah, that, you know what, that's a good question, because we were pleasantly surprised by some things. I think the flattened chicken was probably our biggest surprise. And again, everybody thinks about beef or tougher, you know, long, slow cooking things. But the flattened chicken, so we took the chicken, you take the backbone out, spatchcock it, you flatten it out, just a little bit of seasoning. We did a tandoori one, we did a piri-piri one, and the seasoning is kind of irrelevant, but you can use whatever you want, or even just plain. But like Jay said about the turkey, you know, when you're cooking a whole chicken, to get the breast and the thigh cooked to the exact same temperature and to the same texture is near impossible when you're doing a whole bird. But I love a roast chicken. You know, you kind of deal with it. Okay, the breast's going to be a little bit dry by the time the thigh is going to be done, and that's just how it is. Or you can brine it. You can, you know, any number of theories, cook it breast down. The flattened sous vide chicken was so melt-in-your-mouth juicy and falling off the bone. We actually included instructions that you, like, slide it out of the bag onto the baking sheet, because it really is falling apart tender. And then you just brown it under the broiler and crisp it up. And it was, yeah, probably the best, you know, roast, I use that term, loosely, but roast chicken that you can, you know, possibly do. And we really were very surprised by that one. And while we weren't huge fans of the poached egg, all the other egg things, so if you ever cooked a creme caramel or a little quiche and you have to put it in a water bath, that's essentially what the sous vide does. So we did all kinds of custard-based things in little mason jars, and that was pretty cool too. And it was kind of ironic, because we were making these little crustless quiches, and then one of the, you know, national coffee chains came out with a sous vide egg breakfast item while we were working on this. It was pretty hilarious, because you could buy them there for, you know, $3.50 each, or you can make them at home for 25 cents. So that was pretty cool, because they're just like a nice little egg thing, and you can make them in the little jars, stock up your fridge, and eat them for the week. So that was pretty cool. Jay, any surprises for you?
No, I think I would tend to agree with the flattened chicken. And the thing that was surprising to me, and I recall from being a child and eating chickens at my grandparents' farm and my uncle's farm, and they had a richer, meatier, more fragrant flavor. And nowadays, because chickens are mass-produced and you know, they all taste the same, and they've had the fat bred out of them, and you know, if you're not careful, you can get air chilled. But if you're not careful, you'll get water rinsed chicken, and I really find they have no flavor. But we just utilized grocery store chickens for this testing, and the chicken literally was reminiscent of childhood. So that was very eye-opening for me.
All right, I'm excited to get into this now. It's lunchtime where I'm at, and you pretty much have me starving now.
Perfect. Oh, one other surprise I thought was pretty interesting, we weren't even going to put it in the book, and I was like, no, this has to go in the book, was a burger. So you make the burger patties, and you cook them in your sous vide, and you can actually freeze them already cooked right in the packet, or freeze them all individually in bags, and then pop them in your sous vide, and they're so moist and juicy, and then just brown it at the end, like either in a skillet or under the broiler or on the grill. And when Jay was working evenings, it was kind of funny because I'm home for dinner a lot, and it's like, oh, I'm not going to make burgers just for myself. But if it's already cooked and it's sous vide, then you just warm it back up, and that was actually kind of a nice revelation because they're really juicy and tender. And people I think are often paranoid about, all the warnings about ground beef, making sure they're cooked thoroughly. So this was a really nice way to keep it juicy and still cook it till well done, and then just finish it off to get that browning. And I really liked the burgers.
That is very cool. So I think we're close to our time. So I will put links to your book in the show notes for this episode. But why don't you go ahead and share where people can find you online, if you have a website or blogs or social media or that kind of stuff.
I have a website. It's jennifermckenzie.net. There's a couple of blog posts. But social media is probably our most accessible. And I am Foodworks Jen, FoodworksJen. And that is on Twitter and Instagram. And Facebook is Foodworks by Jennifer McKenzie. And Jay is Instagram.
On Instagram, I'm NUTT.JAY. And on Twitter, I'm JAYNUTT50.
Well, that was a great overview of sous vide cooking. So do you have anything else you want to mention that we should tell people about or anything we forgot?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I think, I think one of the things is when you learn, we like to encourage people to read the basics. And I mean, obviously, that's the name of our book, but read the how-tos, because getting confidence is probably the biggest stumbling block in sous vide cooking, and read the whys, and that way then people can sort of extrapolate to their own recipes. We've given a whole bunch of recipes, but if you learn the technique, and we did include sort of basic steak, basic chicken, basic, tough cuts of beef, and really once you get the confidence, and there is a good margin of error, you don't have to sort of be so precise, but reading the hows and whys, and people, once they get going, I think they'll be amazed what exactly they can do with their sous vide.
And I think it's probably important to add, because it's a question that comes up quite frequently for us, is the idea of food safety. That we've been taught since junior high school, the first time that we're cooking anything, is that chicken has to be cooked to 160 degrees and turkey to 170, and there are degrees of doneness. And there's a really helpful appendix at the back of the book that we've compiled about food safety, so that you can sort of, we've taken some very specific scientific terms and sort of translated them into home use food safety, as to how chicken at 160 for 5 seconds translates to chicken at 145 for a minimum of 12 to 15 minutes. So time as well as heat, time and temperature. So those are always important. That like Jen said, read the tips and read the safety. So there's parts of this that will translate, that as people get comfortable, if you cook a steak 3 or 4 times, perfectly medium rare using sous vide, it might give you the confidence then to take the raw steak directly to the barbecue and try it then, because then you're going to know roughly how it feels, how it looks, how the density seems to change.
Okay, great. Well, as I said, I'll put all this information into the show notes for this episode. And I think I still have a little bit of time. I might just update my Santa wish list with a sous vide cooker and your books. So
there you go. There you go. Perfect timing.
Yeah, I think you still got time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jay and Jennifer.
Thank you, Roger.
All right, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jay and Jennifer, authors of Sous Vide Basics. As I mentioned, if you're interested in the book or if you're interested in any of the information or links that were brought up in today's episode, you can head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/104. That's just the number 104 to get to the show notes for the episode. All right, one more reminder. If you'd like to find me on Facebook, you can find me at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. You can track me down on Twitter at TKCpodcast. And of course, if you have a lot to say or you just want to have a conversation offline or at least not in public, you can send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. All right, everybody, thanks so much again for listening. And until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.